This episode of the Rental Income Podcast is sponsored by 1-800-GOT-JUNK. Save $10 off your next junk removal by booking online at rentalincomepodcast.com/junk. That's rentalincomepodcast.com/junk.
Inspiring interviews with today's top landlords. This is the Rental Income Podcast. And now, Dan Lane.
Joining me on the podcast today from Kansas City is Larry Meyer. Larry was on the podcast almost 2 years ago, and I wanted to bring him back today to talk about his process for when he has a tenant leave and how he turns over his properties. Larry, welcome back to the show. It's good to talk to you again.
Dan, great to be back. Thank you for having me.
So it's been a while since you were here. Why don't you, for anyone that maybe hasn't heard your old episode, it was episode 19 that you were on. But for anyone that maybe hasn't heard that episode, why don't you just tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got started in real estate?
Sure. I'm an old timer. I go back to 1985. I bought my first rental house. This was in the urban core of Kansas City, Missouri. And I had a friend of mine tell me how to get a house ready for a Section 8 tenant. Section 8 is the government subsidized rental program. And it worked out wonderful. The houses were cheap in the area. One turned into four turned into 10. And away we went. I had other people calling me then to manage their properties. So I got my real estate brokerage license, which you have to manage for others. In my heyday, I had 2,500 units that I owned and managed. That has scaled down substantially. I'm now 60, so I don't want to work that hard. But we're still active buying and selling real estate in the urban core area of Kansas City, Missouri. No shortage of houses, not a lot of competition, wonderful return on investment. We buy, sell. I've got three rehab crews, so we're kind of a turnkey shop, and it's worked out real nice.
2,500 properties sounds overwhelming to me. How big was your team when you had that many properties?
Oh gosh, I had two large condominium projects that I managed, but one was a full rehab on 800 units. Those were 15 construction guys all by itself, plus administrative. It was too much.
Wow.
Way too much. So we scaled that down. And on management side, I try to keep it around a couple hundred units. And then whatever I'm buying and selling. And that seems to be a nice manageable number with a decent sized staff. My son came on board, just got his real estate license. So he's on board now. So kind of the next generation has come in. So it's just working out real nice.
And so you personally own 60 of the properties and that you manage. Do you find that's a good number that you're comfortable with and it's not overwhelming, doesn't take up too much time?
No, it works real nice. Since we're in a fairly concentrated area in Kansas City, when we're working on one, and usually what I do when I find one house that, I stumbled across a house, made an offer on it, and then on the same block, I found three others that it either had been boarded up, had been abandoned. One gentleman just went into a nursing home, that type of thing. So, we're pretty concentrated. So, having that number, when you've got a maintenance guy working on 123 Main, he's three doors down from 129 Main,
right,
and he can check on it so we're not running around all over town. And that's the key. You got to find your little niche and you got to do it better than anybody else.
Sure. Yeah. That really makes things a lot easier when it's all in the same area there.
Correct.
So what I'd like to talk to you about today is your process on how you turn things over when you have a tenant leave. So let's kind of walk through the process. So let's kind of start with a tenant that maybe has a year lease, that the lease is getting ready to come up. When do you reach out to them to find out what their plans are, if they want to renew or if they're going to be moving out?
Yeah, usually I've got a tickler file on my the software program that I use, and it notifies me 60 days prior to the lease coming up. My leases have a clause in it where they automatically renew. It renews to a month-to-month tenancy. So if they do nothing or if they say, well, I'm going to think about it, and usually they get tied up or doing something else, it automatically just renews. And okay. So I've still got a lease. They're in place, and it's a month-to-month. If they come back and say, oh, I forgot, that's great. Give me your note or your written notice 30 days prior and, you know, leave it the way you found it. You get your deposit back. It's no problem.
You don't have any kind of automatic escalation on the price if they go month to month? It's at the same rate?
It depends on the market. It depends on the house. Depends on how long they've been there. Sometimes in my market, in my area, I'll leave the rents the way it is because, for a $10 or $20 or $30 bump, for most folks, you're not going to think twice about it. But in this market, that could be the difference of a tenant that's paid like clockwork. Now you're out of her budget and she's got to go somewhere else.
Right.
So,
okay.
You know, I'm always of the mind that I'd rather have less money and not have an empty unit. Because, right. And we'll get into is when units are empty, that's when you really got to work again.
Right. So if they stay for, say, 5 years, are you typically keeping the rent the same for 5 years, or do you try to, because your expenses are going up?
I'll always try and get more.
Okay.
And as my costs go up, you've got to pass that on. But, you know, if most of the properties I pay cash for, or if I've got financing, it's at a stable rate through a private investor. Taxes rarely go up much in that area. And, you've got your prices at Home Depot always go up, but, you know, it's really minimal. And like I said, if you're getting $600 a month in rent from a tenant and you need to raise it to $625, she says, you're out of my budget. I can't pay that. She moves out. Well, now you're out at least $600, right. Maybe $1,200 by the time you get it turned around and rented. And so what have you accomplished?
Yeah, right. Now, if a tenant does leave, what do you find it typically costs you, not including vacancy, but just because you're going to have to go in there, maybe you're going to have to do a little painting or replace some carpet or something. Do you find there's a set amount that it typically costs you when a tenant moves out?
Yeah, invariably. Because the... I don't allow pets. That doesn't mean that, there hasn't been one at some time, but, usually it's the issues are carpet. And if they've been there for a while, you can shampoo them, but if they've been there more than a year or 2 years, because we use, a lower grade carpet, from Home Depot when we do the rehab for just this reason, a lot of times it's cheaper just to pull it out and put new carpet in. So you've got carpet, and you'll almost invariably have to repaint. You've got, just normal wear and tear things, mini blinds. You'll always want to change the locks.
Right.
When they move out. So it's there's, assuming no real damage and rarely, even when I've been on bad terms with tenants, rarely have I had a problem with somebody destroying the house. You hear all sorts of horrible stories, but I've in 30 years, I've never really been burned like that before.
Okay.
Knock on wood. So, but you'll always have carpet, just the normal wear and tear, a house with kids. Remember when your kids were growing up, fingerprints on muddy feet everywhere.
So ballpark, maybe $500, $1,000, like what kind of dollar figure would you put on it?
On the houses that I do, you can recarpet an entire house for probably about $700, maybe $800.
Okay.
That's a 3-bedroom, 1-bath. If you get a 2-story in steps, it might be a little more, but it's pretty inexpensive.
Okay.
To shampoo it, I could bring a guy in with a shampooer, professional steam cleaner, it would be $300 to $400. So okay. I'd rather just put new carpet in and then when the problem is fresh. And then to paint an entire house, probably $1,200 with paint. So it's not much, but you're a couple $1,000s down the road.
Right. So do you almost count on that when a tenant moves out that it might cost you $2,000? What are you kind of budgeting that when you're Now, do you use carpet in all your properties, or do you use maybe Pergo or or are you generally using carpet?
A lot of the houses in the area that we deal in, I mean, back in the day in the 1920s when they were built, everything had hardwood floors. I mean, mm-hmm. and it's gorgeous hardwood floors.
Yeah.
Your only question is that, you know, do they have paint all over them? Have they been, you know, sometimes they're, you know, they've been water leaks. So they're, you know, they're raised up, they're cut out, and there's plywood stuck in. So if they're serviceable when we renovate, if the hardwood, that's the first thing we look at. If the hardwood floors are in any decent condition, we'll leave them and we'll just either sand them down. Or a lot of times you just, you know, you put a buffer on it and it gets all the paint, you know, if they got like paint splattered all over it. And a couple coats of polyurethane, and it looks like a basketball floor. It's gorgeous. Okay. And sometimes folks want, you know, we'll just buy them a remnant of an area rug at Home Depot for $50 and call it a day.
Right.
And, you know, and that's, if we can do that, that's the better way to go.
Yeah. All right. So say if a tenant gives you notice that they say, well, we've got to move out. When do you start showing the property? Is it as soon as you get that notice that you're advertising it and bringing people in there, or do you wait for your tenant to move out?
Well, I'll put my feelers out since I'm so ingrained in the neighborhoods I'm in. A lot of times I'll have a house is at 123 Main and I've got a house at 129 Main. And somewhere along the line, she told me that her sister's looking for a house in the neighborhood. Keep your ears open. And I'll kind of start that, you know, my network of people. I don't like bringing in, you know, folks are real leery about having other people come in and look at, oh, there's a TV, there's right. this, there's that. And, you know, so I try to stay away from that. But I put the feelers out that I may be having a 3-bedroom, 1-bath on the same block. Is your sister still interested? That type of thing.
Okay.
You try not to show it until they move out.
Okay. And then when the tenant does move out, do you start showing it right away? And how long does it take you to typically line somebody up?
Oh, as soon as they vacate, we're over there. I mean, if things go the way they're supposed to, I mean, I'll be there at 1 o'clock, and they turn the keys over. I do an inspection. We do the inspection together. I compare it to the move-in inspection that we did, X amount of months or years ago. And, that determines, the amount of their security deposit that they get back. I get a forwarding address. So I know where to send the check because, you know, the check has to go out within 30 days, Missouri law.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I get the keys back. Keys give me possession of the property. And whatever's left behind after that, I just, you know, we can toss it in the trash. And it's very important to get the keys back. We always change the locks. I put all the keys together. They're rotated. I might use them on an apartment complex on the other side of town, whatever. But they're put in a, you know, so we recycle the locks if we can. We put brand new, we put new locks on. Those are changed immediately. The utilities, a lot of times I'll have what's called a revert to owner, can't see power and light. If you have to give them notice that, when the tenant calls to have the electric turned off, then it immediately reverts over into the owner name. So in the wintertime, there's, you know, you make sure because, you know, sometimes folks move out,
right?
They turn the electric and the gas off, but the water department never shuts the water off at the curb. They just leave it. And then you've got a nasty surprise when it's 5 degrees outside.
Right.
So I always have the revert to owner, and that way it automatically, whenever they call to have it turned off, it immediately goes into my name or the owner of the property, and then there's no, you don't have to worry about frozen pipes or whatnot.
Is that pretty easy to set up? You just call
the utility company and say, I want to set up a revert to owner, and it's just on there.
Okay. So let's go back to the final walkthrough. So when you are doing the final walkthrough with your tenant, and maybe there's some damage, maybe they put a hole in the wall or maybe the floors are a little bit damaged. Do you tell them right then, look, this is, you have a hole in the wall. This is going to cost me $100 to patch it up. Are you giving them a number right then? Or do you?
No.
Okay.
I don't. I mean, we go through the entire house. I take pictures. If there's any damage, I take pictures, and because I have pictures of the house, the way they moved in, I always take pictures of my completed projects for, you know, marketing purposes for, you know, so I remember, oh yeah, these walls used to be brown. How come they're black? And, you know, what did you guys, who told you could paint the house,
right.
type thing. So I always take pictures of before and after. So they'll say, well, this was like this when I moved in. Well, ma'am, here's your move-in inspection, and here's the mini blinds in the living room, and you checked the box, says it was good. So I'm sorry, that's, you know, right. I'm not quite sure. You know, your memory must be foggy today. So, but I don't give them, because I will go through and after it's done, I mean, I'll go through and tally up exactly what the damages are. Some I have to get, you know, I have to stop and think about, well, here's this, but it's because that happened and that happened, which really wasn't her fault. So, I mean, I, you know, when I tell them here's, I just need to make sure that, you know, that A, that, you know, the problem that was caused was actually, you know, a problem that, you know, they're doing. So there's a little more investigative work that I like to do. And I like to sit down, and then after they're gone, I like to go through the thing, you know, the house again, and just kind of, all right, get a feel for, and then I assign prices, and then I send a letter out with a check or a bill.
Do you ever have problems with the tenants maybe not feeling that it's fair and they're coming back to you trying to get more money?
No, because they did a move-in inspection when they moved in. Mm-hmm. And I've really, you know, a lot of times, well, that was like that when I moved in, and well, ma'am, no, it wasn't, because here's your move-in. I mean, don't you remember right. We did this? It was raining out. I mean, you kind of paint the scenario.
Yeah.
And most folks are reasonable. You know, you did it. You know, I mean, I'm not mad at you. I said, but you know, it's coming off your deposit. I mean, right. You know, what do you want me to do?
Right.
So yeah, once you explain it and you realize that you're not, they're not being nickel and dimed, and that's why I always put new carpet in. You know, because well, the carpet was like that. Then it's like, well, yeah, we didn't put new carpet in, and so then you're stuck. So
right.
Carpet's so inexpensive. A guy can come in with a rug doctor and do a fast once over and it looks like it's brand new again. More often than not, and maybe we don't have to do all the rooms. Maybe it's just the living room where there's been a lot of wear and tear, but I'll usually try and put in new carpet. So there's absolutely no question at move out that it's freshly painted. We've got nice new carpet in, and, we don't have any problems.
Are you able to keep the pad a lot of times, or do you have to replace the pad too?
The pad usually has to go.
Okay.
It depends. If the pad, you know, if that's why I don't allow animals. So if it's just dirty, a lot of times the pad is fine when you take the carpet out. But if there was an animal in there and that's why it stinks, then obviously dog is using the living room as a litter box, then pad's got to go also.
Right. Now, why don't you accept pets? Have you had a problem in the past with pets or?
Yeah, because, okay. First place, I am deathly allergic to most dogs and cats. Okay. So that takes me completely out of the picture to begin with. I can never come in the house again, especially if it's a cat. You'll have to have an ambulance outside because I wouldn't be able to breathe. But number two, I mean, 99 times out of 100, the house is going to be filthy. Dog food's left out, which rats, rodents. The backyard is full of, you know, dog poop. You know, I just don't.
Okay. Now, what about a cleaning? Do you get, like, from what a tenant might think is clean moving out, could be totally different than what a tenant expects moving in. Do you get a professional cleaning done? On the house?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I've got my part of my crew. I've got my own cleaners, and I've got a couple ladies that's all they do. And it'd be no different than having like a Merry Maids or a professional service come. I mean, this is what they do. They're final cleaners. So I mean, when the make ready guys come in and they clean everything out, and they kind of give everything a once over. And then once everything's done, it's painted, everything, the construction debris, everything's gone, then the cleaners come in and then they go through with the pledge and the Lysol, and everything's clean, the tub, boom, boom, boom. And as they walk out the door, a little spray of room freshener, and the door's locked and it's ready for move-in.
Is that a cost you can pass on to your tenants, like a cleaning fee when they move out, or do you just have to eat that cost?
For me, it's just, again, the market that I'm in. I mean, there's only so many things you can pass on and still be competitive. Again, my thing is to get the property rented to a good person as fast as I can.
Okay.
And so a lot of stuff, I mean, it's just a cost of doing business.
Okay.
And if you're screening right going in and you do your screening, you do your homework and you stay on top of things, then, you know, at move out time, it's usually not a problem.
Okay. Now, what's your policy on, say, if the lease starts, say, on the first of the month and the property is vacant and the tenant wants to get in there a few days early to move some stuff before move-in date? Do you allow that, or is that a strict policy that the lease starts on the first?
If it's, if they want to move in, you know, if the lease always starts on the first of the month, if they want to get in, on the 20th or the 23rd, then they'll just pay the prorated. If it's a couple days before the end of the month, or the first of the month is on Sunday, and they want to start moving in on Friday, here's the keys. You know, don't call me on Sunday. Right. You know, here's the keys. Welcome to your new home. And they're in. I don't care about a couple days. It's just.
Wow. Well, it seems like you've got a really good system. It seems like you've got a good crew. You've got a good team in place, and you've got things figured out. So thank you for sharing that with us. Larry, if anybody wanted to reach out to you or learn more about you, what's the best way to get in touch with you?
Well, let me give you my office phone is area code 816-561-0744. The name of my company is ICR Real Estate Services. And I'm in Kansas City, Missouri. Email is Larry, L-A-R-R-Y, at ICRRealEstateServices.com.
And why don't you tell us a little bit about what you do? Because like, if somebody wanted to invest in Kansas City, you could help them out, right? You could help them find a property. You can manage
most definitely. I'm a Missouri and Kansas real estate broker. I try to stay on the Missouri side. We could talk about Kansas for quite some time at another session, but I try to stay on the Missouri side. I am primarily urban core Kansas City, Missouri, and most people go running away when they hear, oh my God, urban core war zone. It's just not like that here.
Okay.
It's just not like that there. You know, it's just not like that here. We don't have the bad part of town. We just don't have that here. A typical example, and this is one that I did, for another investor the other day, he'll be all in on a 3-bedroom, 1-bath house for $22,000. His taxes and insurance, about $600 a year. Management is 10% of the collected rent, and the rent on that house will be about 6 to 6.25. So given those scenarios, figuring in my head this morning, you got a cap rate of about 25%.
Yeah. That's a really good.
That's not a bad deal, and you can get in on the purchase end, and we can renovate. We've got houses in stock that we've already completed that are already renovated, so you don't have to go through the trials and tribulations of oh my gosh, when's it going to be rented? I also work with a lot of just private lenders that they don't want anything to do with the house; they just want to be the bank. So we've got a real nice program on that also.
Now, tell me about the $22,000 house. Did that house need a lot of work, or is that ready to go?
That's ready to go. That's
okay.
It.
Wow.
That is a completed, ready to rent house, or will be. I mean, that one was just earlier in the week was purchased, but, it'll take us a couple weeks to get done. And there's, these out, they'll always need 10 to 12,000, excuse me, in repairs. And usually, if the foundation is good and the roof is good, everything in between is manageable. And it's just a function of, you know, if it doesn't need, like this particular house didn't need new electric, but the sewer line running from the street to the house had caved in because of the oak trees. So, you know. There's a number of different scenarios, but it always, you know, they always kind of run into about the same amount of money. So that's a typical scenario, $22,000 for a house. And you're going to net, with rent about $6,000 a year. So it's about a 3.5-year payoff.
So that $22,000, that's all in, that's the purchase price and the rehab price. a rehab cost?
That is everything.
Okay. That's
everything.
What was the actual purchase price for the house?
That house was purchased for $7,500.
Wow. Okay. That's really, really incredible. Awesome. Yeah. Well, I mean, if anyone is interested in learning more about the Urban Core of Kansas City, I would definitely recommend reaching out to Larry. He is definitely an expert in that area. He can definitely help you out and get you pointed in the right direction and get you in a property and help you manage it. Larry, thank you so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate it. And I can't wait to have you on again.
Great. Looking forward to it, Dan. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for tuning in. My name is Dan Lane, and this has been the Rental Income Podcast.
The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.